For her guest today, Marian welcomes one of the most original and creative of today's composer-players, pianist Cedar Walton.
That's really a pretty tune, and it's so nice to have you here on the show. Thank you for coming.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Marian. I'm glad to be here.
That's from your new Columbia album, or maybe it's not the newest one, but one of the albums on Columbia.
Yes, the tune's called NPS, and it's from our new album on Columbia. The album's entitled Soundscapes, and we really... worked hard at trying to make it an album that contained music that was not predictable, among other things.
Well, I think you succeeded.
Thank you very much.
Where some of those harmonies go. Like that song itself, you don't expect it to go quite where it does go. It's
right. I must say, I surprised myself with that, but I'm still amazed at that piece. I wonder, did it come from me or somewhere else, or through me, you know, maybe from somewhere else? Because I always think of Mantovani. I think I told you that earlier today, and you said no. But really, you know, for some reason, the way it came out on the record, you know, with this string section playing this melody that I wrote, it doesn't sound like anything else I ever thought of before, but I like it a
lot. It's very beautiful. It has a lovely mood to it. But, you know, I was watching you play, and I'm thinking to myself, boy, he must have taken a lot of lessons, because you have your hand position and the way you finger the notes all very close to the keys. You know, I admire that, to see somebody playing correctly. So you probably did take lessons.
Well, I took some lessons, but I really don't think that this posture I have came from the lessons. This is just something I probably adopted because... I don't have a great technical, range as I would like to have. I really fell in love with jazz piano and boogie-woogie piano as a real small child and proceeded to teach myself how to play that. And my mother, who had some piano students in our hometown there in Dallas, Texas, encouraged me to take lessons and learn how to read, because I was really quite on my own in liking jazz and jazz performers, you know, including Duke Ellington was of course one of the family favorites, who visited our hometown at least twice a year on his normal, route, and also invited especially by some of the organizations around there to play there. So he was an early model for me when he came to Dallas, Texas.
I think he's an early model for all of us.
Right, how about
that? You know, certainly for me, my God.
Yes.
And, with a harmonic sense particularly.
Yeah.
Well, so I didn't realize that was where you were from mm-hmm. from Dallas. And when did you come to New York then?
Actually, I came to New York some 25 years ago in 1955. And by this time, I had moved to Denver, Colorado, to attend the University of Denver. I fell in love with that campus there. That was quite a new dormitory facility there in that year, and for me to see dormitories that were small apartments for the students to live in, that really fascinated me. Never mind the music curriculum, the apartments were really attractive to me. But of course, they did have a good music department there. I was able to get acquainted with most of the orchestra instruments individually.
And that's how you learned to write then.
I guess. You know, as it turned out, it helped my writing tremendously. It almost made me take writing and orchestration for granted, which is a good, you know, instead of you thinking that it's difficult. By my exposure to all these instruments, by way of my familiarity with all these instruments, like on a one-on-one basis, I really became familiar with their personalities and characteristics, and started writing as if a person should write as compared to a person should learn to write.
That's great. And then you came to New York and worked with so many groups, it just takes my breath away.
Right, yeah.
J.J. Johnson, Eddie Harris, Stan Getz.
Right. I think they were all impressed, like you were, with my posture.
Yeah? Well, yeah. You know, you see people
really
very wild,
that much.
You know, with a cigarette hanging out of their mouth, kind of hanging all over the piano, and you just play very correctly.
Right,
it
yeah.
looks good.
I'm very happy about that because it's quite an illusion. I'm not always playing that much, but I look like I am.
But meanwhile, I'd love to hear you play another solo. You've got a whole bunch of standards that you play. What's this one going to be?
This one is entitled My Ship.
That's beautiful. Incidentally, that's Kurt Weill, I think.
Yes.
I was thinking my
ship
while
you were
playing.
Was one of the heavyweights.
Yeah, but I was watching you do that and thinking to myself, you're very at home playing solo piano. You must do a lot of that.
Well, not in public. I do it at home all the time.
Really?
You know?
I thought you played some clubs around New York solo now and again.
Well, actually, it's almost solo, Marina, with the bass, with the duo situation, because I really like drums. I've become fond of their function in a trio setting, you know.
Oh, yeah? We should talk about that sometime.
Yeah.
Although Billy Higgins was a great on that Eastern Rebellion
right,
album.
Yeah. He's a pianist's dream.
Is he?
Yeah, because
you
he
mean
plays.
Not too overbearing?
Oh, he's not overbearing at all. He's quite the contrary. He adds so much, you know, and he's so intense, but he's so quiet. In fact, we have problems with him in the studio because he doesn't play loud enough.
Where is he? I want him immediately. Send him over when he's not with you.
Okay, you got him. I'm trying to book him now because he's in Italy doing some things, and we're going back over in May with the quartet on that Eastern Rebellion album. And
How nice. That Bob Berg.
Mm-hmm.
And
we'll be doing
Sam
a tour
Jones.
Starting. Tony Dumas, who's on my Columbia records, is going to make it now. He's going to do because Sam is got his own group now, so he's relinquished the post. But Higgins will be in town, Marion. So I'm going to give him your number.
Great. Okay. I was thinking also while you were doing that, how clever of you to put Love You Madly in there without losing the tune, you know?
Oh, yes.
I love those interpolations mm-hmm. when they just come in a witty sort of a way, you know? That was really nice.
Yeah, there's a little quotation there.
Yeah.
Well, Duca even did that himself on a couple of his tunes that are almost identical. One of them is Never Treats Me Sweet and Gentle. What's the name of that?
Got It Bad?
Yeah, that fits in with another one of his, I think.
Cooter's Concerto? Was that what it
could be.
Was that? I think that was what that was called originally. Are you thinking of...
That might be the one, yeah.
I know what you're talking about. Like one tune was written as the melody and the other as a counter-melody for the...
And they both end up being songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Boy, he could take any little phrase and make it into a song.
Right.
Boy, he was unbelievable. Well, how about, I want to get at this fantasy in D. I want to learn this thing. You want to let me try it with you?
Of course.
Okay. Yugetsu?
Yugetsu is the original title, and then we decided to rename it later.
But fantasy in D is nice.
Okay.
This is yours, of course. All right, you take it away, and I'll follow.
Okay, I'll start with that interlude. Okay. Give it 16 bars before we come in.
Okay.
Thank you. To hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast, tune in next week to your NPR station. Log on to pianojazz.npr.org to find a station in your area. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from Save America's Treasures, a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Parks Service, Department of the Interior, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR.